So when some people see this topic, everyone seems to think that it's going to be addressing exactly the shiloh that they have. So people came over to me, are you going to address this? Are you going to address that? I'm going to really talk about one general sugya in buying, which comes up a lot in buying real estate, and it comes from this week's parasha. There's a connection to it from this week's parasha. The mitzvah in this week's parasha is, one of the dinim in this week's parasha, parasha's Bahar, is the mitzvah of selling bate arei choyma. A person sells a house in a walled city. The halacha is that the owner, the buyer, acquires the home, he sits in it, he can live in it, but the seller has the right for the first 12 months to purchase back the karka, to be paid the karka, to be buy back the house. So the Gemara, the Mishnah in Erechin, in Daf Lamed Aleph, says, HaMoicher buys Bevatei Arei Choyma, HaRezeh Goyel Miyad VeGoyel Kol Shnei Masach Chodesh, he has the whole 12 months to buy it back, HaRezeh Kimin Ribis, VeEinai Ribis. It's very similar to Ribis, but it's not exactly Ribis, interest. And the Gemara says, why are you saying HaRezeh Kimin Ribis? VeHatanya, HaRezeh Ribis Gemura. It's Mamish Ribis Gemura. This, if the Torah would not have allowed this, if there wouldn't be a specific pasuk telling us that you're allowed to do this, it would be ribis gomer. Ela shatayr hitirasai. However, in this particular example, there's a gzeras akasov that it's mutar. So this is a shoresh for a lot of different shailas that come up when it comes to buying karka. There's shailas of ribis that come up. But how do we understand what is the ribis regarding this? It seems to be two separate transactions. A person bought a house in a bate arei choyma, and he lived in it for a year. And then 11 months later, at the deadline, the seller comes back and he says, you know what? I sold it, I was desperate, but now I have the money here, and he buys it back from him. So there's no ribis involved. There's no loan. There's no ribis. There's two separate transactions. He sold it and then he bought it back. So where's the ribis here at all? So what Chazal are telling us over here is that really, this type of clause that you make in a transaction, if you put in it, you say, well, really, for the first 12 months, I have the right to buy it back. The way Chazal understand that is that it was never really a sale at all. Now, what happened was that the seller, when he gave the money, when he accepted the money and gave the property, really, he was accepting a loan. He was accepting a loan for the value of the property, and he gave a collateral, a mashkoin, a collateral back for the value of the loan, equivalent to the value of the loan, which was the property. During that time of the loan, the quote-unquote buyer, who's really what we're calling now the malva, he's the lender, he gave the money, is sitting there getting free rent, basically. He's sitting on a house, he's getting free rent and everything. And then at the end of the 12 months, the deal is, if you pay me back, then I'll give you back the house, the collateral. You have 12 months to pay back the loan. If you don't pay back the loan, I'm keeping the house as the payment for the loan. So if in fact the seller, that's the borrower, ends up paying back the loan, then it turns out that for the whole 12-month period, the buyer, who's really the malva, was sitting rent-free in a house because he lent them money. So that's ribis daraisa, ribis ktsutza, and therefore if a person would make such an arrangement, and not in the case of a bate arei choyma, bate arei choyma is gzeras hakasav, it's mutar, but if a person would make such an arrangement, the Gemara says that's ribis ktsutza, and that would be awesome.
So that's only the arrangement by bate arei choyma. The standard person who sells a house and puts a clause in that he can buy the house back at any time, whatever it is, whether
if you put in that clause, then you have to say that you have to either retroactively or during the time charge him rent.
Why can't we look at it as two separate sales? I sold it
because it's a tanai in the mechira. If we could look at it as two separate transactions, then we should have looked at it like that in Bate Arei Choyma. Why not? What's the difference?
Why
is Chazal, why did Chazal look at it like that? I'm not sure exactly. I think because you can't be Mishayer such as a Schus, I guess. So, this particular example may not be so common. Maybe not such a common example, but you could have a similar example. You could have such a case where What's not so uncommon, I spoke to some people right before the shiur to find out a little some scenarios that come up. So what could come up, a scenario is the following, where a person doesn't know exactly when the sale is going to go through, and he makes arrangements, and he says to the buyer, he says, listen, I'm going to sell you the house, but you don't have to pay it all to me up front, right away. You can, you know, pay me 90%, 10% will work out over the course of some time, but I need about 6 months from the time that we close on the property to be able to move in, for you to move in, because I need to arrange things where I'm moving to another city, and I need to arrange my things, and I may still need like 6 month period to stay in the house. So I'll gain, you gain. You pay me 90% of the value now. The 10% I'll hold for you, and you pay me later. But let me live in the house for 6 months. So that would be mamash very similar to this case where you're letting the person live in the house rent free because he lent you the money. He didn't make you pay the whole thing up front. So that would be a problem. You would have to work that out. Make sure that either he's paying you rent or you make some sort of arrangement. Now, the common cases of ribbis, now there are other shilas obviously in buying karka, but let's first see if we have time. We'll get to the other things but that are also in this week's parsha.
In that last case, would the rent have to be equivalent to the money that...
No, the renter just has to be the fair market value. Right. If he's paying fair market value, so then he's not gaining anything by staying in the house. So the cases which are ribbis are the following. I mean, one case which is very common, also not here so much, but if a person's buying new construction, so this is very common in Lakewood, they kept on building more houses. So a person buys new construction, so what happens is that you put in, they tell you, l'chatchila, that the price when the houses are going to be completed, the price is going to be whatever it is, $350,000, but if you buy now and give 10%, then anyone that buys now can get it for $300,000. So they're telling you l'chatchila that whoever purchases the house now is going to get a cheaper price. And there's nothing here. It's all on paper because there's no house. They're just starting the development now. So if you it's not enough to sign your name on the paper. You have to give 10% in order to get that price. So essentially you're lending them the $30,000, and because you're lending them that money, they're giving you a cheaper price. Now if the money goes into an escrow account, so it's not really a loan, because the definition of a loan is that the borrower, the lender, the borrower can use the money. So if it's in an escrow account, it's not a loan. They just want to lock you in. But if the development company or whatever it is using the money, which is normally the case.
Not necessarily. Because the builder can get a loan trace because he has an escrow.
That's his problem. That's not. I lent him. Then he got the loan from someone else, but I didn't lend him the money.
But he's basing it on an escrow.
Okay, so then he got a loan from someone else because I put money away. But if it's in an escrow account, then there wouldn't be a problem. But normally, I don't know. Is that the case? Normally they can use the money to build. That's the whole point, right? Okay, so if the developer, what? Right.
Or they have a clause that says that we're allowed to use it.
Right, okay, so in a case where they would be allowed to use the funds and it's not an escrow, so then it would be a serious shiloh of ribbis, because since you're lending them the money, you're giving them essentially the 10%, the $30,000, they need that capital to be able to do their deals. They're giving you a cheaper price. That's a problem. That's all.
You're buying down the price. You're giving the money up front to buy down the price.
Yeah, but you're giving the. But the only reason they're giving you that is because now they have more money to use. So that's essentially a loan.
My question is, I'm giving it to them to buy down the price.
No, but that's why they're doing it. That's why they're willing to give you a cheaper price. If you sign your name, they don't want the commitment to know that you're going to buy it, because then you could just sign your name and put it in escrow. They need the loan. They're only willing to give it to you for cheaper because they have no more capital now.
The question is it refundable or not? If they can't close, is it refundable or not?
Well, even if it's refundable, that's a loan. It's a loan.
Refundable, it's a loan. It's not refundable, you just gave it.
He's saying they could just walk off with the money, so you're not lending it.
It's not. I mean, they're not viewing it as a loan.
Yeah, sure they are, because That's, if they wouldn't borrow it from you, they would borrow it from the bank.
But it doesn't conform to a loan. It's not responsible. You're not going to give it back.
It doesn't make a difference. It's hakdamas mois. The point is, it doesn't make, in this case, you're right, it's not a real loan. But it's a loan derabanan. Derabanan means that they're giving you something because you're giving them money in advance. You're essentially, this money didn't buy you a property. There's no property here. See, this is only a question in new construction. If you're buying, if you're doing such an arrangement with an existing home, then you could say, well, I have, you know, a 10% ownership in the house, or I bought something already, but there's nothing here. It's new construction. No. Okay, so they talk about that. They talk about that. But a lot of times they don't even own it yet.
The guy that buys it and gave you $30,000 can hypothetically go ahead and make a deal that when it closes, I can sell it to somebody else.
Okay, so he's selling his house, but he didn't really buy anything.
But the developer can't do it.
It doesn't make a difference. See, you're right. It's not a real loan, but it's Rivas Darbanan, because Rivas Darbanan is anytime you're gaining something from the fact that you gave someone money in advance. You advanced him money, and you didn't gain anything back from that. You don't retain ownership in the property. You don't have anything. All you have is money sitting by him. So that's their abundance considered a loan, and therefore anything you get in return for that, if you're getting a cheaper price, that would be a problem.
If I give a person money
for free,
then you give it to them.
No, a matana? No, but here it's going towards your purchase price. I mean, you're giving it to them in advance. When you end up buying the house, you're not giving it all the 300 later. You're going to give 270 later because you gave 30 in advance.
Three payments. So it's, you buy a new house, you're paying in three payments. So 30 years, you're saying three payments. And the first 30%, then the next 30%, 2 years later. So the first 30% you give is a loan. What is it? What is it into a purchase?
Yeah, it turns into a purchase. If there's a real house there, then you could say, Rabbi Kivager says, if the house is ready to be moved into, it's in good condition, so then the first money you put down, that's already called towards the purchase, because you have something that you, tangible. You could say the money is going towards buying the house. But if there's nothing here, then what's the money? It's money transferred or shuyas without anything coming back to me, so that's a loan.
There's some of the car rental companies that pay in advance.
Okay, I'm not going to get involved in every right. There's early bird specials on camps and tuitions and all those things. Now, all those this place can talk about, but each one is a different shiloh. Are you getting anything back? Are you getting a service? What are you buying? But here they talk, here specifically when you're talking about new construction, there's not much nothing here, and it's just a commitment that they want, and they want the money for the commitment. That's a shiloh of ribis pashtas ribis darabana. There was ways to get out of it, but I'm just being aware of the shilas, and every case is different.
You're getting value from your hands.
It's even worse. That's even worse. It means what you're getting is that even if the value would go up, you're still locked into the price. So that means the moicher is not only he's knocking off the price, he's giving you more. He's giving you that even if the price goes up, I'm still going to give you the cheaper price. So it means, let's say he ends up selling it, the market value when he finishes the construction is 400, he's still going to, so it means you were able to lock into a cheaper price because you lent him money. That's even worse. Nemesis is that shiloh is more of a shiloh even on an existing home. Let's say you lock into a price because you give him money in advance. You say, listen, you're going to sell your house in a year, I'll give you money now to lock in, and in a year from now, sell it to me at today's rate.
So don't look at it as payment. Don't look at it as a loan. Look at it as payment.
Maybe you can't look at it as payment if you didn't buy anything.
You have the Yishuv Hadas.
Yishuv Hadas. He has Yishuv Hadas that he got a loan. I mean, that's called you gave him a loan. So if that case, if you know someone's going to sell in a year and you give him money in advance to lock in today's rate, that could be a shiloh also. Because that's the whole point. Because you're lending him money, so you're getting today's price, not tomorrow's price. Okay. So that's one shiloh.
If he actually purchased something, your money went towards.
So that's on a loan. So it means you got something back right away. It means you gave money and you got a loan. Means you got something and you don't have anything back yet. So
he's going to give it to you then at that price for the rest of the agreement because you're purchasing.
You didn't buy anything. You don't have any ownership now. You have a shibud aguf. Normally, the shibud aguf is that he has to pay you back the money. Now, the shibud aguf is to sell you the house. But that's all you have because of your money.
But you do have something though, because after the deadline, where everyone has to pay $350, you can sell that $300,000 house to anybody.
So that's just schus, but it's not called. You didn't buy karka. You could have that through a promise also theoretically. Let's say you would sign. You could sell that also. That has nothing to do with the money. You didn't buy that with the money. That's the commitment. The money is really just transferring reshus, and you didn't get anything back for it. So that's free money. So he got free money, and because he got free money, he's giving you a cheaper price. And like Rabbi Englund was mentioned, is saying that really this is a shaila in a lot of different, many different areas that come up. In Mecca Chumemka, you could have such a shaila. But we're not going to get into involved in each one. But anytime you see some an advertisement, if you pay by this amount, this day, it's cheaper, that's a problem. And you're willing to tell the person, you're willing to say, that could be a problem. I'm not saying it is, but every case is different. No, we're all talking with Jew to Jew, yeah. There's another common case, and I'll start with this case, and from that case, we'll take the yisoid from that case and apply it to other cases which are similar to it, which may be more negeya. But the case which is the most simple to understand the halacha is when the seller, when he sells the property, and when he sells the property, he decides, and it's not just the seller, he really could have this anytime, but I guess more common is the seller. Is the seller, he sells the property and the title transfers, so now the buyer owns the property, but they make up that they're not going to pay the whole thing in now, and essentially the seller is going to hold the note for a certain amount of money. So let's say the whatever 10% of the purchase price or 30% of the purchase price is going to be held by the seller. So the buyer owes the seller a certain amount of money, and he's charging him like a private mortgage, basically. So he charges him interest. So, and this is really true, it doesn't have to be with the seller, but it's normally more common, I guess, is where essentially you have a Jew buying from a Jew, and you have a private Jew giving another Jew a private mortgage, essentially. So he's trying to give him a loan and charge interest. So obviously, that's a problem. And there are three basic eitzes how to do this. And we'll see, you know, how to apply it to other cases, which are much more common. The most common, simple way would be to make a heter iska. Now, everyone heard of heter iska, which kind of just sounds like sign this shtar and you could charge ribbis, right? But if you understand what heter iska is, so we'll just try to explain it briefly. We'll take a few minutes just to explain it, because that's what he said that everyone should understand anyway. Because people do business, then they sign heter iska, you should understand what it is. So heter iska, what it is that the person lending the money wants to get back a 10% interest rate. So you can't just lend the money and charge 10%. So what he does is he tells the borrower, he says, really, I'm not lending you the money. I'm investing with you. I'm giving you money to invest. And I want you to guarantee me a certain return on my investment. Or we'll split it. Let's say we decide, you know what? I'm investing with you. Any return that comes, we'll split. We'll split it in half. But I'm not really going to trust you. More or less, there's different versions, but let's just keep it like this. It's simplest to explain. I'm not going to trust you to tell me what the return was, because I'm not looking at your books. I don't know what's going on. So I'm giving you money to invest. I don't really trust you to tell me what the return was, unless you make a shvua d'araisa, holding a sefer Torah in front of two chashuva rosh yeshivas. So you have to make a shvua d'araisa. And if you don't make the shvua d'araisa, to get out of that shvua, which is a scary shvua, just pay me 10% and we'll call it we'll assume that there was a 10% return on the investment. So he's getting 10%, or let's say it was a 20%, so we're shutzim, it's half and half, so you're getting 10%. So that's really what heter iska is, basically. Instead of lending him the money, you're investing with him, and you're getting back a return, which is the return from the investment. So that's why the poskim say that to use a heter iska for a private loan that you need for your own personal expenses is very, very schwer. Because a person needs money to borrow to buy groceries. Especially, you can't make ends meet, he has to borrow money. So you're going to say, I'm giving you a heter iska, I'm giving you money at 5%. I mean, he's not investing anything. His tomatoes aren't, that he just bought at Publix, aren't going up in value. So there's no investment here. So it's very schwer. If you don't understand what heter iska is, and you need some money, sure, let's just download a heter iska, sign it. If you don't know, it really doesn't make any sense to do that on a private loan. You have to be doing it for some sort of purchase or some sort of business. And when you're buying a home, it makes sense already that you can have a heter isk on the house, because the house isn't an investment. It goes up and down in value. And therefore, you could have an heter isk. So in this case, what the essentially, the seller who's lending the money, let's say he's lending 20% of the purchase price to the buyer. So what he's saying is that it's your house, but I want to invest in the house. So I'm putting in 20% into the house. You give me back the 20% for my investment, and I'm going to assume that it goes up 5% a year unless you make a shua otherwise, whatever it is. So that's how you're going to get, it's going to go up, well, not 5%, because he's a 20% shutif, so you have to say it will go up 25%, and I get kefim my ratio, I get 5%, and that would be how it would work. So you could make a heter iska.
Between the two of you, you're setting the rate that's going to go
on? Well, no, I'm saying, listen, I'm lending you the money, but this is what I'm assuming is going to go up. Yeah, but the thing is, what the person can say, if the guy lives in the neighborhood, or the guy knows the market, it's also very shver, because what's he going to say? Well, if it didn't go up, I'm going to make you, I don't believe you unless you make a shvua. You yourself know how much it went up. So how could you make the guy make a shvua? If the person giving the heter iska knows the business that he's in, it's a little bit hard to make a heter iska. So there's another eitzah. Because of this problem, there's another eitzah. And this eitzah is Reb Moshe Feinstein writes this eitzah. He doesn't write it for this case, but we're going to use it for this case, and then, like I said, we're going to apply it to other cases which come up a lot. What he says is that instead of buying the house fully and then borrowing the 20% from the seller and paying him back, what you do is that you say that you become partners in the house. You're only buying 80% of the house. The other 20%, the seller still owns. And then when you pay him back, let's say you'll be paying back a mortgage. So how does it work? A certain percentage of your payment is principal, a certain percentage of your payment is interest. And every month it gets less. Next month you pay a few dollars more of principal, a few dollars less of interest. That's how you would pay back the loan. So Reb Moshe says, don't do it like that. What you do is you buy 80% of the house the seller still owns 20% of the house. But now you're living in his house. He's not living in 20% of it. So you have to pay him rent. You have to pay him rent. But you also want to buy back the house eventually. So what you do is that you pay him rent, and that's equivalent to like the principal, however much he owns in the house, you pay him rent. And what's equivalent to the interest payment, that part is you're paying to buy back the house eventually. Actually, the opposite. The principal payment is you're paying him to buy back the house. Sorry, it's the opposite. You're paying him to buy back the house. Every month, you're paying a little bit more until you end up buying back the whole house for him. In other words, until you end up paying back the loan, the little bit you're paying every month of principal is really just paying him to buy back the house, so he's not a shutif with you anymore at the end. And what's equivalent to the interest payment is like paying him for renting out the space in his house that you can live there. So your 80-20, the next, after a year, is going to be 81. You're going to own 81% of the house. You're going to own 19%. So you're going to own, you paid back over the course of 1% of the loan. So you bought back 1% of the house. And the interest payment is going to go down now because now you own more. So your rent is cheaper because you own more of the house. So basically, take the same ratio that you principal to interest, but instead of paying principal and interest, what you do is you say that I'm paying you to buy back the house, and whatever I don't own and I'm living in, I'm paying you rent. So Ramosha's shtar, and this is how he sets up such an arrangement.
That only works with the buyer and the seller. You can't do that if you're borrowing money from someone else.
That only works with the buyer and the seller.
You
can
do it with someone
else. You can make them a shutif in the house. I mean, that's how we're going to see it, exactly.
Who has the title? Notwithstanding the fact that the deed is only in the name of the buyer, not the seller, and notwithstanding the fact that the seller is also getting a benefit if he really does own that, retain that 20%, but the buyer...
Well, that's what some people don't like Ramosha's tonight.
The buyer is still responsible to pay the taxes on 100%, and still responsible to pay all the costs of the upkeep. So from a logical standpoint, again, it's
well, heter isk is also like that in a sense. You go to a bank, everything says halva, 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 and heter isk says investment, 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 right? So as long as there is a shtar between you, what it says in the arkois doesn't necessarily matter. There's a shtar between you that we own 80%. We're shutfim, essentially. But what you're saying is a good shaila, legabe, The guy, they do talk about that, that it may not be such a good arrangement. If he's really honest, he may not want to do this for Moshe, because if something breaks in the house, so you're going to go ask him, can you pay for 20% of the air conditioning, right? So he may not really want to do that. So he says there that you should only do this if the guy has a good insurance on the house. So that, because otherwise...
Is he paying for 20%
insurance? Now where this is even more common is there's two other cases where this is also more common. You have to do this in a different case also, which is that nowadays anyone that has experience in this knows it's very hard to get a mortgage. Person doesn't have perfect income or perfect credit, it's very hard to get a mortgage. So what many people have to do is that they really have to ask a favor from someone else. Let's say their parent is able, would qualify theoretically for a mortgage. So what you do is you put the mortgage and the title in the name of the parent, because they qualify for the mortgage, but essentially the child ends up living in the home. So the child lives in the home, the child, let's say, put down the down payment, and the parent is just taking out the mortgage on their name, but it's really, the child is taking the full responsibility for all the payments to the bank. So the child is living in the home, and the parent, and paying all the mortgage payments, but the parent is just to the bank, was able to get the mortgage and qualified for the mortgage. Now, it seems like a great arrangement. So the bills come in, the name on the bill is the parent's name, but the child just writes all the checks and sends it straight to the bank. The problem with that is that really it's mamish, it's also deraisa to do that. Because what happens is that the bank doesn't know anything about this child. The bank, as far as the bank is concerned, only lent the money. Let's say they lent $100,000 at 5%, they lent that to the parent. And the parent went ahead and essentially gave the house over to the child. And he lent the child also the $100,000 for him to own the house, and he doesn't want to pay the 5% to the bank, so he's charging the child essentially 5%, whatever rate he's getting charged from the bank, he's charging the child the same 5%. So the parent now is charging the child. So it turns out that there's two loans. The bank is lending to the parent, and the parent is lending to the child at the same rate. When the child is paying that whole check back to the bank, he's really paying his parent's loan, because he owes his parent money. So essentially it's real ribbis.
How are the two loans if there's only one contract? One loan from the bank?
How'd you get the, how do you own the house?
How do I own the house?
Who owns the house, Lemaisa?
The parents.
No, I mean, is that true? So why is the son paying mortgage payments?
So he's living there.
So what? So then pay rent?
Yeah, the bank really owns
it.
No, not anymore. I think it's just a mashkin. It's just a collateral.
The son's
on Arif. The son owns the house. Kipshuta, that's the kavan at least. The kavan of the people involved, he's not paying rent, the son is not paying rent, the son owns the house.
Yeah, no,
who put the down payment on the house?
The parent and the son.
So what's going to happen if the son doesn't pay?
The bank's going to go straight to the parent.
I know, but the child also has a responsibility of the father to pay the parent.
Yeah, he has nothing.
He made it up. That's how they made it up, and they made up an understanding between them is that the child owns the home. The child put in all his savings in there. He put his down payment. He made the payment, and he's made paying the payments. At the end of the mortgage, who's going to own the house? He's going to own it. Because he only got $100,000, and he's paying $100,000 plus 5%.
That's fine, but the rate was you gave me how much I need to pay the bank.
Yeah, but you didn't lend me that much. You only lent me $1,000 a month.
The arrangement is you have to pay me X plus 5%.
Why? I only gave you X. That's ribbis, in other words. I gave you X and pay me back X plus 5%.
Couldn't the child assign the loan to the child?
But the whole point is the bank is not asking to that.
Between the child and the father.
That's not the issue. The issue is not between the child and the father. The issue is between the bank who lent the money doesn't know about the child. So the bank is only interested in the father. So as far as the bank is concerned, they lent the money to the parent. Then the parent went ahead and lent that money to the child. That's really what happened. What?
We could have a problem with the rent. I mean, maybe just the bank is specifically on the loan for the house.
Okay, so this is someone who's mirroring me, this Shiloh. I'm going to get to that. What are you saying, Rabbi Sokol?
Why can't the mortgage payment just be the rent?
Okay, so this is where a Moshe comes in. So now again, you can arrange the same two arrangements that we said in the previous case, which is where the seller is holding the note, so the seller is the lender. So essentially that's what's happening here also. The parent bought the home and then resold it to the child, and he's lending him money. I mean, where did he get the money from? He got the money from the bank. So it's really the same thing. So you have the same two ideas. What you could sign is a heter iska. You could sign a heter iska between the father and the child, so that in that case, really the house belongs entirely to the house belongs to the father, and then the child is borrowing money from the father in order to invest in this house, and he has to pay back the father the percentage that he's being charged from the bank.
Is it worth the same by cars, by the way?
Yeah, I guess so. This is all the same, but
hold on.
Let me just finish because hold on. Let me just finish the two eights. No. Why?
Reality.
Okay. So that's between me and the father. I did something my privately.
You're strictly talking halacha. It's nothing in reality.
It's not reality because the bank will foreclose on the house. The parents not going to go and foreclose on the kid.
Right, that's the same.
What are we not going to? I mean, is a parent? The parent doesn't want. Okay, so now you're saying you technically can't sell it. So now the only other. So you tell me. So what is this arrangement? So who owns the house? Legally, the parent. I understand. So what's the child's yachas here?
The child is paying the interest.
Okay, so, but I'm saying such an arrangement exists. So why is the child paying this amount? That's his. Why is he paying that amount? And it's only rent, so that means that when the parent, La'alenu, dies, all the other siblings are going to own the house. It's just going to go to the Yerusha, so he's not going to own anything.
It depends what the parents have in terms of their estates, whatever they have in the trust.
No, because the understanding obviously is that the child owns the house, right?
It's his. Why deal them up with this deal to these halachas? You can't use these halachas in a vacuum.
Now, I understand, but who? I'm just saying, practically speaking, who? What's the understanding between the son and the child? So, why is he taking that achrayus, the child?
Why is he taking it? I mean, it's certainly a risk that the child is taking. Because at the end of the day, they're both taking risks. But at the end of the day, he doesn't own them.
Okay, so what you could do is, so what? Yeah, exactly. They made an arrangement that no matter I took a mortgage out from the bank, but I'm selling it to you. I mean, that's really what they're doing. It's not nitzvas the kinyan. Why is not nitzvas such a kinyan? I mean, that's really what's happening. In everyone's das, that's what's happening. That's for sure. So, okay. So this is the question.
So you can't like your neighbor borrowing your car.
Hold on, I can't.
Can you get your car from the bank?
Okay, well, that's nothing to do with that. You're not paying him back interest. So now you could also apply over here another example. So this case would also be an example where you can apply Rav Moshe's shtar, which is basically what you say is that the father, according to the bank, the father owns the entire house. But the child put down a down payment. So let's say the child's down payment was 30%. It was 30%. So the child now owns 30% of the house. But the father took out the loan for the rest of the 70%. So now there's shutfim in the house. The child owns 30% because he put in the down payment. And the father owns 70% because he borrowed the money. Every month, the father is paying his loan back to the bank. But the child is paying the father two payments. He's paying him the principal, which what we're calling the principal payment is the child buying it back from the father. So every month he's getting more ownership in the house. And what we're calling the interest payment is the rent that the child's living in 70% of the father's house. So he's paying a rental payment. So this is the way Rav Moshe says you can arrange it. So it's 30% kefi, however the percentage was of his down payment he owns, and the rest he's really renting. And he's renting to buy. So he's paying every month two payments. One is to buy back a certain percentage of the house, and one is to rent out the rest. But then it's true that really you have to be very aware of what's really going on, because then, so people call up with the shayla. I was there in the Beis HaRos, so people came in with this, and then they would call back like in the next week, and say, well, do I have 30 days to put up my mezuzah? Or do I have to put it up now? Because, you know, really it's my house. I mean, I signed a Moshe Shtar, but I'm not renting it. I mean, I'm not a soicher. It's really my house, and maybe I should put up a mezuzah right away. I'm going to put up a mezuzah. Or do I make a baruch hatov ha'meitiv? So you have to understand what's going on exactly. Is it really your house? Is it really a rental? But that's the other case where you would have to work out exactly how to arrange it, either with Heter Iska or using Rav Moshe's shtar. Or you could just sign a shtar. You're saying make the whole thing a rental payment and just make a clause at the end. After 30 years, you own it. I mean, but that the father will be makneh to the child after 30 years. But what? Right, I'm saying, so it's a problem. Yerusha is whatever it is, whatever the mitzvah is. Okay, we're running out of time, so I want to talk about one other shaila of ribbis. There are a lot of other shailas, but we didn't get to the other ones outside of ribbis. But the other one, which is very negeya, and I want to talk about it because there's a big michshol, is binegeya an arev, which is a cosigner or a guarantor. The way that the Torah, the Chazal, look at an arev is that there's two types of arev. An arev we call a guarantor is that, you know, Reuven lends Shimon money. If Shimon doesn't pay, and after Reuven took the appropriate measures to get the money from Shimon, he cannot get it from Shimon. He took him to court. He did whatever he can do. He can't get the money from Shimon. He's allowed to go to Levi and get the money from Levi. So that's fine. There's no problems with that. But there's another arrangement where Reuven lends the money to Shimon, and Levi is called an Arev Kablan. An Arev Kablan is not just, you know, a guarantor, but he has equal right to be Toveya, to ask to get the money from Shimon or Levi. He can go to either one. He can essentially go to either one. Now, what does it mean, go to either one? So the Shach says it means that he's allowed to go to Levi before he actually takes Shimon to court. Or he doesn't actually have to take any legal action against Shimon. If he can go to Levi before he takes any legal action to Shimon, then they're on equal. That's called that he lent the money and to either one. You know, he lent them to both. They both have what?
In that case, why would anybody ever want to cosign?
Oh, it's a good question. Anyone want to cosign? But so I asked someone to get me a definition. So it says over here, this is from this is some definition. It says over here, loan guarantor versus co-borrower. So he says, we have a customer who has applied for a home loan but does not qualify because his credit history is no good. The loan officer, her brother has offered to help her by guaranteeing the loan, but the loan officer would feel better if he was a co-borrower. What's the difference? So it says like this, the difference between a co-borrower and a guarantor is that the co-borrower is primarily liable on the loan. Period. And whether it's his or her fellow debtor defaults, he has no defenses or anything like that. A guarantor, on the other hand, is not liable at all unless the underlying borrower defaults. So in other words, if a guarantor is really nothing, but a co-borrower is where the bank can really have an equal tevia on either one. So even though the letters come, you know, monthly to the main borrower, but they don't have to take the borrower to court if they can't get the money. They don't even have to foreclose on that. They can go to the co-borrower just as fine. So the halacha is that if that ends up happening, some say even it doesn't end up happening, if what ends up happening is that the co-borrower ends up paying the money, what we look at it is the following. We say is that the lender lent the money to the co-borrower, and the co-borrower, he doesn't have the house. Who has the house? The borrower. So the co-borrower lent that money that he borrowed from the bank to the borrower. Not the bank. The bank didn't lend it to the borrower because the bank is not asking the money for the borrower. The bank is asking from the co-borrower. So the bank lent it to Levi. Levi ended up lending it to Shimon. And then when Levi finishes paying the bank, Levi's going to go to Shimon and say, you know, can you pay me back? And if he's going to ask him to pay back, he's going to ask him to pay back all the principal and the interest. So it's Ribbis Ketzutza. So it's a big, big problem. And nowadays, it's a shaila. If you're even allowed to sign such a shtar, because since it may end up happening, you signed a shtar that has an arrangement for Ribbis Ketzutza there. So a person who doesn't have good credit or is not able to get the loan themselves, many times they want to have a co-borrower, like it says in this article. They don't want just a guarantor. They want a co-borrower. In that case, where they want a co-borrower, it's a serious shiloh, they're even allowed to sign such a shtar in the first place. unless they make their own, and let's say the co-borrower is a parent, and they make their own arrangement that even if I have to pay the bank, I'm not going to be tovea you. In other words, the parent says, you know what, I'm a co-borrower, it's your house, everything. If the bank asks me and you can't make a payment and they come to me, I'm not going to ask you to pay me back the interest. You can pay me back the principal part, but not the interest part. They have to make that arrangement in order to sign the shtar. Or they have to sign a heter iska, and it's a very complicated heter iska. And that would be a way to get out of the shaila. When doing these things, there's a lot of, besides the ribbis, which is yardea, but there's a lot of chesh mishpat shailas that come up, and the person has to be very, very honest in when they do their business. And I was just going to read one chelik. It says over here from the Smag. The Meir Yeshiva read this to us one time. It says in the Smag, in the mitzvah of Lahashavas Agzela, he says like this, Kvar Darashti Lagolus Yerushalayim Asher B'Sfarad. He says, I darshan this drasha to the Golus of the people that left Yerushalayim and are now in Spain. Ulashar Golius Edim. Ki ata sheherech ha-golus yoysim midai. The Golus is too long. So how do we get out of the Golus? Yesh lisrael lahavdil mahavale oilam v'lechos b'chaysama shal kadosh baruch hu emes. We have to be very careful with the meat of emes. V'shloy l'shaker, and not to be dishonest, loy l'yisrael v'loy l'goyim. V'loy l'hat oysam b'shum inyan. U'lakadosh atzimam af b'mutar lahem. And even if something is mutar, gezel akum, or whatever is mukhtar, but a person has to go l'fnim ashur sadin. Sh'ne'emar sh'eris yisrael liyasu avul lo yidabur kozav lo yimotze b'fiyam loshan tarmis. And then he says, "Azay, Uchashiyava Kadosh Baruch Hu Leshiyam. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring Mashiach. Yoyim Ragoyim, the Goyim should say Bedin Asa. Oh, it makes sense that Kadosh Baruch Hu chose to beguile these people. Ki him anche emes, v'toras emes b'fihem, because they're honest people. They do business properly. So I understand why Kadosh Baruch Hu chose to beguile them. Avol in misnaguim a Goyim b'ramois, but if people are dishonest in their business, Yoyim the Goyim will say Re'u ma'asa Kadosh Baruch Hu. Bringing Mashiach is going to be the biggest chil Hashem. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring Mashiach to redeem Klai. So on the Goyim are going to say this is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's people. These people that are just they're always dishonest." So he says, that the key to the Golus is that we have to make it that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Goyim will see that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu brings the Gula, that it's appropriate that we should be Nigal from we should be Nigal, and that Darcheh Darchenoyam, and everyone should understand that a person that follows the Derech of the Torah, it's a beautiful Hanaga, and it's Hashem, we should be Zoychetaka, that through that Hanaga, we should be Zoychetim, be as Gal Tzedek Meir Remeinu.